my first hospital that I was in charge of, my CEO was awesome. He wanted all organic, no styrofoam. It was really cool. He was, and this was in 2007. So it was like really kind of ahead of the times. And he said, I don't want any profit. I don't want any markup. He's like, I'll cover all labor from the hospital standpoint. And he's like, I want you to sell it at cost.
I'm Jana Nickel, and this is the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Hey there. In this episode, you're going to learn about pricing strategies. In particular, you'll learn what's meant by break-even point, prime cost method, markup, and running promotions. I've been hearing from RDs-to-be with questions about management and food service, so I'm super excited to be covering this content today. And I have an incredible dietitian who's an expert in this area here to talk to us about pricing. Before I get started, it's time for a shout out. Love this so much. Hope Good just passed the RD exam. She sent me the most heartfelt, kind message when she passed the exam. It brought tears to my eyes. When I hear all the amazing RDs to be passing the exam and able to start their career, it's so exciting and emotional. It's a long road to get here. I know exactly how it feels. So to pass the exam and to be on the next stage of your career feels so amazing. Hope, you're a trooper. You kept going and you were determined to get across the finish line. Congratulations, you deserve to be here. And I'm so happy to personally welcome you to the RD community. For all of you listening to this podcast and still studying for the exam, whether you're still finishing your internship or you're getting close to your exam day, I want you to know that you're incredible. You're motivated, determined, and you have big dreams. If you're feeling defeated or overwhelmed, I'm a believer in acknowledging that. Breathe through it, but don't let it stop you. Keep going, one foot in front of the other. Envision yourself walking out of the exam with your passing score in hand. So keep going, stay focused. You're almost there. I don't want to keep you any longer. Let's get started. So I'm so excited for today's episode. I have Mariana Stark on the show today, and she's going to talk to us about pricing. But before we get started, Mariana, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, Jana. Thanks for having me. I'm really excited to do my first podcast with you. I am a dietitian. I've been one for quite a long time. I've done a little bit of clinical, a little bit of outpatient stuff, and then I kind of settled into food service for the past 12 years. ended up managing lots of different types of facilities, and right now I'm at a hospital setting and also starting a private practice.
Which is so exciting, and I love that you've done multiple things, because that's one of the beauties of this profession, is that you can start in one area and get experience and then move on to something else. And so I think for a lot of people, for a lot of listeners, it's nice to hear other dietitians' journey, where they started and where they're at. And your journey is nowhere near done. And now you're transitioning into something else, which is super exciting. So I'm very happy for you, and I'm so excited for you to be here. So I was really looking for an expert who could talk to us about pricing strategies and helping the interns and the students and really the RDs to be, to help them prepare for any questions that might show up on the exam that have to do with pricing. And so I'm really happy that you said you would be here today. And I thought we could maybe start with what break-even means. So what is meant by that when we're dealing with pricing a menu for the break-even point? And what do you have to consider when you're trying to break-even?
So break-even is definitely a good starting point, because if you're not hitting that break-even point, there's really no point of being in business. So the break-even point for us, let's say at my current hospital, each item we sell has to cover at least the cost of the food, the labor. If I paid rent or mortgage, it would cover that. Pretty much everything involved with ordering that food item and preparing it and serving it should be included in the break-even point. So, for example, a chicken Alfredo, we would include the time and hours of purchasing it. We would include the item price, so like the chicken, the sauce, and the noodles. And then I would see how long it takes to make. So we do batch cooking. So there's like certain minimums we'd have to prepare. So let's say 20 servings would cost a certain amount of money. Let's say 20 servings cost $200. That's kind of a lot, but so then I would have to definitely sell it. What is that for $10? $10 each to cover like the labor and everything. It is kind of like a deep calculation, but once you know your labor costs like per hour, it does make it a lot easier. We do samples. So if we're going to have a new item, we have the staff and the managers, we cook the food items beforehand. So we kind of get a good feel for how long it's going to take and if it's feasible and if it tastes good. And then we do the price breakdown, and you want to make sure that it's somewhere near reasonable. So some things like a $10 chicken Alfredo plate may be too high for our market. So then I would have to go back and look and see, okay, can I find it a little bit less expensive, or can we cut out some of the labor costs and go from there? So there's some like back end, you know, rationalizing of making sure that it's within in the right price point, but you don't want to be operating at a loss. So let's say it costs $10 a plate, but I'm only charging $6 a plate. That means we're actually losing $4 for every item that we sell. You know, and if you're selling like we, you know, a lot of hospitals sell 200, 300, 400, 500 meals, you know, every day, definitely adds up.
And so break even would then be that when you sell the dish, however many you sell based on your labor as well. So you look at all of the costs and then what you sell. Break even would mean you don't make a profit, but you also don't operate at a loss. So you're basically just selling the dish and not losing or profiting off of that item.
You're right. Yes. So that was the conclusion. So basically, if it costs $200 to make and we're selling 20 servings, $10 each, you know, if I only sell 15 servings, we're not at the break-even point, because then there's still five that we didn't make the money back. So I'd have to sell all 20 servings to make that break-even point. And with food, sometimes it's the same labor costs to make a little bit more. So, you know, you can kind of go above the break-even point, but you definitely want to make sure at the least you're hitting that, or we would pull the food item off the menu. So if you're continually making items, let's say 20 servings is a pretty small number for like a big facility, and you're not selling those 20, you got to pull the food item and stop selling it, because at some point, you know, the demand isn't there. So then you have to go back to the drawing board and say, all right, this chicken Alfredo really wasn't selling. Was it too high? Was it the food, right? And you kind of do some research on what else would work, because you want to sell things, obviously, that people want to buy.
Yeah. And then with the changes in food cost, or when items, for example, aren't available, we're given an alternative item. It might not be the exact item, but it's something that's an alternative. So oftentimes when inflation happens or food costs go up, that would be another reason to change the item if you find that you're continually operating at a loss, right?
Correct. And sometimes, I mean, especially these, there's been so many food shortages over the past few years. It's like almost hard to keep up with. The food order will come and we're missing like six items. And so I have to go to the, you know, the staff and the chef and be like, all right, we didn't get eggs, right? And like, all right, that's a huge item to be out of. So what are we going to do instead of eggs? And so there is some last minute, like creative work with, is there a substitution? Is it within our price range? Could we take a loss for like a day or two, you know, until there's the regular eggs come back in? Or are these eggs going to be out for, you know, a month? Okay, that's not acceptable, right? So at sometimes like taking a loss for like a very short period of time would be okay. as long as you can kind of make it up with some other food items. There's like individual breakpoint, and then there's the whole entire department breakpoint of like the chips, right? The water bottles, the toast, like everything you sell, we look at the whole thing in combination to say, okay, all right, I took a loss on the eggs, but we made it up with the fruit salad.
Yeah. So we kind of have other items that can kind of help cushion our profit so that we're not operating at such a loss when we're dealing with these more challenging times with food items not being available or very pricey. So one of the questions that might come up on the exam is about markup method. And so profit is something that we all think about in business and we need to consider. It's on our radar, but it's also important to make sure that we're pricing our items fairly, like you mentioned, or else we're going to lose business. And so can you explain the markup method and things to consider when coming up with a price point using this method?
Yes, definitely. So a water bottle, let's say, costs us a dollar to buy. So then with the traditional markup method, a lot of people start with a 50% to just see kind of where it's at. And sometimes you'll see, okay, wow, that 50% really brought it too high. And sometimes you still add the 50% on, let's say like broccoli. A serving of broccoli is like 10 cents probably. So you add on the 50%, so that'd be 10 cents. Add on the 5 cents, that would be your, you know, the profit. And then you realize like, wow, 15 cents a serving is still really low. I can go higher than 50% markup just looking at like a reasonable amount that things would cost. So I think the traditional markup method is a really good start just to make sure that you're not, that you have a profit in general. But on some items, you do have to kind of scale up and down. So having a set, you know, we're going to have 50% markup for every single thing. I mean, it's a good start, but I don't think most places operate like that. So if we have a dollar water bottle, 50 cents would be half of it. And so that would mean that we would sell this water bottle for $1.50. A dollar, like, what's the cost? And then 50 cents would be our profit. And that's not taking into account any labor or anything else, but that's kind of the general, like, traditional method.
So if someone's operating a business, hospitals can be a little bit different, but let's just say in general, do facilities when they're pricing or companies when they're pricing, do they look at other companies to see how they're selling it or what they're selling it as comparison points? Have you ever seen that?
Definitely. And that's kind of what, you know, I go out, I buy water bottles sometimes, right? And broccoli and all these other dishes. And so I use like my own like research from, you know, being out and about. And then also you can reach out to other hospitals or other companies and either just go there and see how much things cost, or you can reach out and say like, hey, you know, I'm also going to sell things that are similar. You know, I think my friend works in wine. She's a sommelier. And she said that's a 200% markup for wine. Oh, wow. That's the industry is 200%. So some things, you know, are really high, like wine and at a restaurant. And then some things are a lot lower. So sometimes, you know, you have to just see if is that reasonable, is that a reasonable cost or not.
So that's good to have at least what the starting point is, and then you can go up or down. And so do you ever price something the traditional way with the traditional margins, and then do you often increase it, and what margin do you then do? Is there like a certain number, or you just kind of say, well, let's increase it by X amount, or do you use a percentage when you see that an item is super popular, it's selling, we can make a little bit more, the cost has gone up either labor-wise or food costs and we want to make it up? Is there a number that you use or a percentage that you use, or you just try something out and test it and see how it works out?
It's about 30% normally, like in a hospital setting, to cover like the labor and everything else. So I start at 50%, and then I think, oh, you know, in a hospital setting, the cafeteria is normally looked at like a service. So, you know, the staff that work at the hospital want to just come and grab their lunch and go. And so working with the administrators, you find out, are we wanting to make a profit? Are we wanting to break even? You know, where's our goal here? Because there's always some fluctuation, right? You can always charge a little bit more, a little bit less. And so once you have that in mind, you know, you can price accordingly. So my first hospital that I was in charge of, my CEO was awesome. He wanted all organic, no styrofoam. It was really cool. And this was in 2007. So it was like really kind of ahead of the times. And he said, I don't want any profit. I don't want any markup. He's like, I'll cover all labor from the hospital standpoint. And he's like, I want you to sell it at cost. So pricing was really easy. I would just take all the food items we had. What was the cost of the food items? So that was no markup at all. And then I've had places that really wanted to turn a profit. So then, you know, that's a whole different kind of math from there to say, okay, the food costs $2. You know, we want to include all the labor and the 50% markup and kind of go from there. But I normally don't do like too high of a price increase from the base cost, unless it was like the broccoli example where it's just way too inexpensive to sell something for 15 cents. You know, we're going to do 50 cents. So the you know, the markup is quite high, but when people see a serving of broccoli for 50 cents, they're like, that's great, right? So you kind of have to go item by item. The things that are really expensive to buy on our end are the prepackaged things. So like the Sobe drinks, for some reason, those stand out as like quite expensive. And I'd only make probably like a 10% profit on that. So like anything prepackaged, like some like chocolate bars we'd sell and like granola and stuff like that, it's expensive to buy. And I'd even go to Costco and look and say, wow, like it's even cheaper at Costco than I could get it mm-hmm. at the facility. I'm like, I wonder what's going on there. So it's, you kind of just start being price aware when it's something that you're selling.
Yeah. I think your point of the CEO and what the goal is from leadership, wherever you're at, is a really valid point, because that's going to help drive the decisions you make in your department and how you run your operation based on what leadership's your CEO is expecting with regards to how your cafeteria is operating, whether you're operating to make a profit or you're operating to break even.
It's a whole different situation.
Yeah. So what is the prime cost method? How is that different? And when would you use this method for pricing over other methods?
So the prime method is just the labor and the food costs. So the break even just includes the price of the food plus an additional. It's just a good like base. But the prime cost method is the labor plus the food, which is also a really good method to use, especially if you know how many, you know, hours or minutes it takes to make each item. The hard part, or some challenging part, of the prime cost method is getting like an average salary for your staff. So if you have 30 employees, you know, you could have, you know, someone that makes more money cooking it and someone that makes less money cooking it. So you want to have the average salary of your department or of your employees, how much they make per hour. And then you can kind of break it down from there to say, you know, how long it takes per serving. And then you add in the food costs. So for all of these, I normally only do them in the very beginning when we have a new food item, and probably like once a year to say, okay, where are we at with this? And when I'm doing that once a year, I definitely want to do the prime cost method to ensure like increases of labor costs, increase of food costs. Like it's a more detailed calculation compared to the markup method. It's just quick, right? Like, you know, you sell it for $10, you buy it for 10, you're going to sell it for 15. It's like really quick and easy, but the prime method is definitely takes a lot more time, but it's more efficient, right? And I mean, it's more effective, and you'll make sure to not lose money if you're calculating the labor as well.
So what are the main differences then between break even and prime costs?
Well, in my experience, the break even includes everything, like the labor, the person that purchases it, like the whole entire total. But then the prime cost method is like pricing it out using that. So I think you just get the labor plus the food costs, and then you can price it according to that. So it's like you're not just breaking even, you're kind of steering the ship where you want it to go by changing the cost a little bit.
So break even then would be everything. So you want to make sure that at the end of the day, when you balance your checkbook, let's say, that you have enough money coming in to cover all of your expenses that you have to bring it to, let's say, zero. You don't have any profits and you don't have any losses. Where the prime cost is you're just looking at the item specifically. So you're just looking at the food cost and the labor to make that particular item.
Correct. The like total direct, like the production just for that one item, and then the raw material, like the food and everything just for that one item. And then what's not included in the prime cost is like the manager salaries, delivery costs, kind of like more big picture item costs are not included in the prime cost. But you'd want to include that in the break even, because if you're running a company, you want to make sure you're at least making zero.
Yep. Okay. So I want to talk a little bit about promos, you know, promotions and specials. This happens all the time. It happens for our patients too. They'll say, well, what's the special of the day? Or people will come to the cafeteria and ask, you know, what the special is for the day. And so I feel like people are always looking for promotions and specials. And so do you have any strategies on how you would run a promotion in the cafeteria?
Totally. So there's a few different like kind of tactics that we use. So we have really talented chefs. And so sometimes the special is like legitimately out of like creativity, to where the chef is like, I want to make pancetta, you know, and sell it. And I'm like, well, I don't know if everyone really likes like Filipino food as much. Let's run a, you know, a test kind of to see like how it's going to sell. Like, does it hold up well in the heat? What's the cost? You know, how long does it take to make? So there's kind of like a trial period where I like to sell that as the special to see kind of what happened. And then we can easily track it just for that one day. And then there's the other alternative of we have these rice noodles that have been in the back and that, you know, they're on the edge of going bad. So then we use our creativity in that front to say, okay, what are we going to cook with these rice noodles? Like, let's sell some pho. That'll be the special this week, because we want to make sure to use all of our product and not lose money, you know, with products going bad. We never hold food from one meal to the next, but I know at other type of facilities and places I've worked, it's like, you know, if you have grilled chicken for one day, then the next day you can do like a chicken salad or something like that as the quote special, because you're like finishing up the product that you had from the day before. So there's definitely like some like kind of back, you know, like tricks on the promos or the specials, but those are kind of like the few main items that we do. People love it. Everyone comes in, what's the special? What's the special? And I think with the patients, we try to do like what we do well. So it kind of depends on who's like selling the product. So if the person selling it really likes salmon, you know, they might just go around and tell the patients like, this is my favorite thing to eat here. That's what I would recommend for you. But we also try to sell what we're making already. Like if we're already making meatloaf that day, sometimes that would be the special because, you know, we're already making it. So it makes it kind of easy to just kind of add a few more orders in of that. So there's some creative aspects of it. And then there's also some like logistic aspects of it, of like trying to, you know, use up what you got.
Yeah. And that's really helpful because I've had RDs to be reach out to me, particularly with questions on FIFO, you know, first in, first out, and inventory control. And so as things are getting close to expiring, it's a great opportunity to run a promo, a special with those items, especially in the cafeteria when it's not linked to a patient menu, where you have to be very careful and follow very specifics because it's coded a certain way for allergies and all the nutritionals. But it's a good way to make sure that we're not throwing out and wasting food and money by seeing and being creative on how you can cook. It shows the value of also having executive chefs who are talented and can come up with great recipes and menus that they can put out in the cafeteria.
People love it. It's like something new and exciting. But let's say the rice noodles, right? I say that because we like had this for so long, these little rice noodles. And I'm like, let's get rid of these noodles, like get them out of here. Because I'd round normally, like as a director with the inventory, the person that does the inventory and the purchasing at least weekly. And we kind of do like a touch base of like, okay, tell me what's going to go bad, you know, in the next 2 weeks, 3 weeks. So we can start planning. And so having that like continual kind of feedback and having a really great inventory person or yourself. I've worked at facilities where I am the inventory person. I keep a log of each food item and the expiration date when it comes in. And then, you know, Excel is magical and awesome and can like, you know, move things to the top and turn them yellow when they're getting close or red when they're expired. And then, you know, you look through that to see, okay, what goes with this? What goes with that? So it is actually a big part of the job now that I'm thinking of it. But then let's say the rice noodles, we wouldn't buy them again. So once we like barely got rid of something and it took like so long to move the product before it goes bad, you know, we would just let everybody know like, all right, we tried the rice noodles. They barely made it, you know, before they expired. Like we're not going to sell these again. So let's think of other products. Sometimes you can only buy certain quantities of things. So we needed 2 packages, but we had to buy 20 packages. So then you're stuck, you know, with 18 extra packages and you got to find something to do with it. So that is kind of a downside of buying, you know, in such big bulks is that you get such big bulks. Like I think it was curry powder. We had like 2 gallon sized jugs of curry powder and we sold curry a lot, but it was so hard to go through that large quantity before it went bad.
Yeah, inventory control is huge. And in a previous episode, we talked about budgets. And so that it all ties together. All of these things all come together and they all tie together. But that happens all the time. Like we've had issues with tea, for example. It's like, why do we have so much tea? Like this tea, I mean, fortunately, tea doesn't really go bad, but you also have to store it. Like, why do we have so much? And yeah, when you buy in bulk, you end up with so much. And for slow moving items or items that you don't regularly have on your menu, they can sit there. And yeah, it's a good opportunity to look at your inventory and go, okay, this item didn't move. Let's hold off, look at the menu and the offerings that we have in the cafeteria, and then reevaluate down the road if you want to bring on noodles again, like in your case.
Yeah. And like with the tea, we'd have like our huddles of the day, and I'd say, you know, mint tea. All right. Like we're really going to push this tea because we want to sell it to clear the shelves off. Space is huge. It's a huge deal in every facility I've worked at. So yeah, that also goes into planning, you know, your specials is like, do we have space for a new item or not? If we don't, you know, we have to be creative with what we have already to try to create something like exciting and fun, you know, with what's already available.
Mm-hmm. And then do you ever do any advertisements? I mean, I'm sure it depends on the facility you're at and the way that they run their business. But do you ever do any advertisements and, hey, come down to the cafeteria? Or is it just word of mouth when people come to the cafeteria? I mean, in a hospital, people are going to come to the cafeteria if they're visiting someone. But have you ever used any different strategies to get the word out that you have certain specials or promotions that you're running in the cafeteria?
I have. I think my like most proud promotional, you know, thing that we did was we're getting our local produce company. I just kind of asked them like, hey, where are we buying these strawberries? Like, where are we buying these, you know, kumquats? And they let us know like, it's a farmer down the street. They're right here. And so I'm like, what? This is so cool. Like we're buying local, you know, from our neighbors and like no one's talking about this. And so I worked with our staff and came up with like really cool items that I think people could make, you know, with these kumquats and strawberries. And we did like kind of like at Costco out in front of the cafeteria. And like I sent it out with our daily manager meeting. And then I also sent it out. We have like a healthy eating flyer that goes out every month. And so I included the recipes that we were going to make in that healthy eating flyer and then said, like, if you want to try this, we're going to make it for you on this day. And we had a ton of foot traffic. It was awesome. And then I got to tell people about the food and where we're getting it from. how important it is to have local food, and to tell them, these are the strawberries we buy all the time. This isn't just a one-time deal. You know, this is supporting, you know, this farmer right here. And I had his picture, like, right behind us. So we did that for pretty much every other month for quite a long time until COVID kind of changed our abilities to do that. But it was a really successful promotion because it was really, like, hands-on. People could see, you know, the huge sign of this, like, really cool farming family and stop and what's going on here. And so that kind of, like, aided the conversation of, like, this is why we price our salad bar at this price, which we were kind of getting some complaints, like, why is it 20 cents, you know, or whatever, an ounce? And I'm like, well, things aren't that cheap. And, like, this is the farmer, right? So your money's going to go to this guy and his family. And we stopped getting complaints, which was awesome. So it's kind of like a two-for-one deal. And we're promoting healthy food. So it was kind of like, it was really nice. Good outreach and good promotion. But overall, like, you don't really need to sell things. But I think that people like promotions in some ways. Then you're not feeling like, oh, the cafeteria food, I have to, like, suffer through it. Like, when you do fun promotions, it's like makes it like a kind of like restaurant vibes, and people feel like more excited to come there.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, that's so fun. I love that, bringing in the education of eating local. You know, that's something that we've been talking about forever as dietitians, and that you could not only support a local farm and bring that into the cafeteria, but also use that as explanation, so to speak, of why things are priced the way they are, and that you're getting fresh, delicious, nutritious food. And so it's really a win-win. So that's a great thing that happened. I love that.
And we've done it for the patients as well. If we get, like, something seasonal and fun, then you know, we'll make like a little, like, a tag, you know, that we can put onto the tray and say, like, hey, this peach came from right down the road, or whatever, and kind of let them know, like, this is a special, it's always with produce. I think I love produce. I'm obsessed with produce. And so that's normally what I do my promotions on, like, when I have educational things, just to, like you said, like, subliminally be like, shop local, you know, support your local farmer and enjoy the fruit, because it's so much better.
Yeah. And that is a really good opportunity for us to take. I mean, sometimes for certain events and holidays, we'll send up little cards on patient trays, but I think it is something that could be done more often, especially when you do get local items in that you're using, just so that people will have something to read, and also because people get bored, but also just the promotion of it, and that we care about your nutrition. And this is one of the additional ways that we place value in the food that we're giving you, and, you know, caring about their nutrition. So that's really amazing. I love that so much. Hopefully places can get back to doing that, because I think it really does help. And it also helps with the community feel, because hospitals are part of their community. They serve their community. And so it's really everybody working together. So I think that that's super important.
I mean, some of those farms, like our company buying their produce, was their whole year. Like, that was their whole crops. And so it really makes a difference in the community to have this whole family somewhat know, hey, next year if I grow something similar, like, I'm kind of guaranteed someone to buy it, which is really nice as a farmer, especially these days. It can be challenging.
For sure. Absolutely. I agree. Well, Mariana, this is so helpful. And I think these strategies that you shared with us today will really help if any of these questions show up on the exam. And I really appreciate your time and coming on today.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jana. Hopefully it helps. And I know the RDs are going to do really well and make a big difference.
They are. Our profession is amazing, and dietitians do great work. And all of the listeners are going to do amazing when they take the exam. And so I'm so grateful for you and for other RDs to come on to the podcast and to share their information and their knowledge with the listeners, because I always say, as dietitians, we do have a role and a responsibility to give back to the upcoming professionals, the RDs to be, who will soon be RDs in our community. And I love when we can get together and do things like this to help future dietitians. So thank you so much for also giving back and devoting your time to helping the RDs to be, because they're pretty awesome.
They are. I love mentoring new RDs. So, and you do always say that as long as I've known you. So I hear you in my mind often. I'm like, have I volunteered lately? You know, Jana, I hear Jana in my mind. So yeah, thank you so much, Jana. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks, Mariana. Isn't Mariana great? Pricing is a strategy. It's a process, and getting it right can sometimes feel like a moving target because the price of items are affected by so many external factors. On top of that, you have to make sure you price things appropriately so people will buy from you. Without customers, you don't have a business. If you work for a company and have a boss, the direction you take with your pricing and overall management of your department is dependent on the goals and wishes of your boss. Like Mariana said, she's worked for different leaders. Some want to make a profit, while others want certain metrics to be the focus, not the profit. And those differences are huge and really change the direction you take with your business. So as you're studying, I hope these concepts that we discussed today make it a little clearer when you're going over pricing strategies. And I want to take a quick second to acknowledge the dietetic interns. I remember being an intern. Some days were really hard. Just as you get used to your preceptor, your rotation changes. You're either assigned a new preceptor or you have to switch gears and are placed at an entirely new facility, rotation, and even area of dietetics. The purpose is for you to get exposure, to learn about different areas, to gain skills to help you pass the exam, and for you to get a better idea of where you want to work once you've passed the RD exam. And I think all those things are super valuable. But beyond that, it helps you once you become a dietitian because you'll have different managers, different leaders. You might work for different companies. You might even own your own company. But when you own a company, you have people you're serving and they come with all different types of personalities. So beyond learning dietetic skills, you learn about people, how to work with different people, and how to be flexible. And that experience is priceless. Keep going, keep studying, keep learning, and stay on top of your study game. There's no limits to achieving the success you so deeply desire. Until next time. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe and leave a review. Share this episode on Instagram at JanaNicholRD and help spread the word to other RDs to be. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you next time on the RD Exam Made Easy podcast. Bye for now.